Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, Manchester City were crowned Premier League champions on Saturday without even kicking a ball following Arsenal's loss to Nottingham Forest. City, who are owned by the UAE, then went on to beat Chelsea 1-0 yesterday to lift that trophy in the Etihad. It's their fifth Premier League title in 6 years. Now, Qatar is also bidding to buy Manchester United from the Glazer family. Newcastle are owned by the Saudis. So with all this money, will the Premier League lack credibility and competitiveness? Is the money killing the game of football? Well, to discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Gavin Cooney, sports writer with the42.ie. Good morning, Gavin.
How are you, Claire?
Where do you stand on this question? The more money, the better, or is it killing the game?
I think probably more the latter, I have to say. It's certainly making it more predictable. So the Manchester City now, this is an era of not quite unprecedented dominance in terms of titles won, but the scale of their dominance from season to season is unlike anything we've seen before in England. Like a fifth title in 6 years, they'll pass the 90-point mark again this season. And this is the trend across European football. The more money that has come into the game, the more it has been hoarded by a few super clubs right at the top of their division. So, you know, like competitions have become more predictable as a result. Bayern Munich have won 10 league titles in a row in Germany. Paris Saint-Germain will win a ninth title in 11 years in France next weekend. Juventus in Italy did 9 in a row. And then, as your intro alluded to, the only way of competing against these guys, these state-owned clubs like Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City, well, people have figured out you can't beat them, so you have to join them. So Newcastle obviously have been taken over by the Saudi Arabian sovereign wealth fund. Manchester United may yet end up in the hands of Qatar. So it's this kind of unfettered wealth which is, you know, creating very compelling and dramatic games at the very top of the game and making a few players very, very wealthy. But it is making the wider health of the game, it's certainly damaging it.
So if it creates a culture of if you can't beat them, join them. But it also means that that gap between those monster clubs that we're talking about and the smaller clubs, the gap becomes wider and wider, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And then you have clubs, well, some clubs will just recklessly gamble. I mean, so you'll hear a lot that the Championship is the second tier in England. Their playoff final is this weekend between Coventry City and Luton Town. And it's billed as the wealthiest game in football because the winner gets a ticket to next season's Premier League and revenues next year worth around £170 million, pounds, which is kind of crazy. And then the Premier League's wealth is so much greater than any of the other leagues in Europe. So I'm sure listeners will remember the whole Super League farrago from a couple of years ago. Okay, some English clubs wanted to join that, but that was also a movement primarily by Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juventus to try and compete with the English wealth. It was just like, we can't compete as it's currently constructed, so let's change the rules of the game and let's form our own competition. So it's like the ripple effects of this concentration of wealth have been enormous. And even from an Irish point of view, I mean, now the whole world wants to be in England. So whereas once we could send our young players over, most talented players over to England, have them be coached and developed there, that's really largely stopped happening. Okay, Evan Ferguson is almost an exception that proves the rule this season, but it's just so much harder now to compete in England, and it's had an effect in Ireland here as well.
And what about the people who say, actually, it's not a bad thing? You know, the players are fitter, the stadiums are looking great, there's the spectacle, as you say, at the very top end of the Premier League. Are there some benefits?
There are benefits in the sense that the game has never been better in one sense. Like, the players have never been so technically good, the coaching has never been so good, the stadiums have never looked so well broadly, and at the very elite level it's been, you know, pretty dramatic. I mean, I'm as addicted to the entertainment of it all as anyone else, but it is the wider picture. I mean, it's just an increasingly few clubs who can afford to compete at this top level, and that level of predictability will ultimately really damage the sport. I mean, Manchester City, like, okay, they're the dominant side of the era, and fair play to them, etc., etc. But, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of jeopardy going into the last couple of weeks of the season, and this is a subjective opinion, but I have to say, looking at Sky's coverage yesterday of the Premier League title lift, there was just a certain kind of mundanity or lack of energy around it. And that's not necessarily because of Man City. It's because of predictability and, you know, here we go again.
Yep, knowing what's going to happen. Now, we don't know what's going to happen with Evan Ferguson's future, but I really do want to mention him. He's the 18-year-old Irish striker. He scored twice for Brighton at the weekend. He has the potential to be a huge star. We've spoken about him before, but again, shining at the weekend.
He's absolutely terrific. Like, it's a great story, obviously, for Irish football. Ferguson has always had a certain kind of precocity around him. He played in the League of Ireland when he was 14 years of age for Bohemians, and we always kind of felt like this guy might make a big impact in England, and so it's proved. Like, a breakout season at Brighton, scored his fifth and sixth Premier League goals yesterday. Only Robbie Keane scored more Premier League goals as an Irish teenager, and I think he's Ferguson is sixth behind Robbie at the moment, and another about 18 months to run in his teenage years, so we'll probably catch him yet. Those two goals secured Brighton European football for the first time ever, so he'll be playing in the Europa League next season, Claire. And if he goes super, really far in it, the good news is that the final of next year's Europa League is in Dublin, so it's a long shot, but it's not totally beyond the realms of possibility that Evan Ferguson might have a homecoming of his own with Brighton in the final next season.
I want to talk to you as well about Katie Taylor briefly. Now, Eddie Hearn is convinced that she will be back for more. What's your own take on whether there's more in Katie Taylor?
Katie Taylor certainly believes there's more in Katie Taylor. I know there's a couple of pieces in the papers today calling on her to retire and quit the sport while she's healthy, because she leaves a legacy unlike any other. That legacy will be unaffected by any results from here on in for Katie Taylor, but she certainly wants a rematch against Chantelle Cameron. It's the first thing she mentioned pretty much after congratulating her in the ring after Saturday night's fight. So the expectation is that there will be a rematch around September time. As to where it is, it'll be in Dublin, will it be in the Three Arena, or will it be in Croke Park? We'll have to wait and see. We can start up that whole controversy all over again. But the expectation is that that Taylor, even though she's 37, will box on and will want to get her revenge on Chantelle Cameron.
And it wasn't to be for Leinster either, losing out to La Rochelle. What's the latest though regarding that alleged altercation at halftime in the tunnel?
Yeah, so the competition organisers, the EPCR, are investigating this altercation reportedly close to the referees' room in the tunnel at halftime of Saturday's final. Again, according to reports in the Irish Independent and the Irish Times, Jonathan Sexton and Sean O'Brien were involved from a Leinster point of view. Ronan O'Gara, obviously the La Rochelle coach, was involved again. So we wait and see the results of the investigation. There doesn't seem to be any concern from Leinster's side that Sexton could end up being hit with a suspension or a punishment that would affect his participation at the World Cup for Ireland later this year.
Yeah, they've a lot to think about though, Leinster, haven't they?
Oh my God, once Ronan O'Gara gets out of their heads, Claire, I mean, that's absolutely extraordinary. An extraordinary achievement for O'Gara and La Rochelle, but like such a sickening and dispiriting end for Leinster. Now that's now two seasons without a trophy, once again coming up just short against O'Gara's La Rochelle. And you know, it's a real changing of the guard now at Leinster. Obviously Sexton's finished playing for them. Stuart Lancaster, the coach, is moving on. And it's twice, 2 years in a row now, that they've spent about 90% of the season looking irresistible and the best team in Europe. But yet again, when it came down to the stretch, they're going to end the season with no trophies, which is just a really horrible end for those players as they head into a summer break that's going to feel too long for them.
Gavin, good to talk to you. Gavin Cooney there from the 42.ie. It's time to go to the newsroom and to Brian Jennings.